From Studio 22, you're listening to ServeCast with your host, William Lamb. ServeCast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William.
Welcome back to ServeCast. We are glad you joined us today. My guest is Garrett Graveson. Garrett has crossed all seven continents and has become an expert storyteller along the way. He's spoken to people from more than 100 countries, delivered a commencement address to 30,000 people, and was named one of the top 10 outstanding young people of the world by the Junior Chamber International in India. Garrett has studied in economics in the University of Georgia and leadership development at Harvard Business School. More importantly than all of that, Garrett is legit. He's the real deal. I met this guy recently at an event called Whiteboard Sessions with Whiteboard IS in Chattanooga. My friend Eric and Taylor are founders of that company, and they had Garrett to come in for an evening, and I was privileged to go and sit and listen and invited him to the podcast. And guess what? In just a minute, you're going to hear his voice. He's coming out of Atlanta, Georgia by telephone today, so if it gets a little spotty for you, just hang in there with us. We're going to talk about faith, leadership, and service, and end with a final challenge. We'll be right back with Garrett. Garrett is with us now. He's on the telephone from Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to ServeCast, Garrett. We're glad you joined us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor and privilege. Appreciate it.
Now, there's a rumor about you, and somebody's saying, and I think it's probably true, that you've traveled extensively nearly around the world, and I think you're on track to be one of the folks that's traveled to every country in the world. Is that somewhere close to what's really happening?
That's right. There's 196 countries in the world, which sounds crazy. So if you ever end up on Jeopardy, that's the answer.
Okay.
and there's 22 people that have been to every country that's alive today. So I'm on pace to be the 23rd. But it didn't always start that way. It actually started back when I was 8 years old, if you believe it or not. And not because I got to travel anywhere, because I had the worst Christmas of all time. And so my mother... I love her to death. I got two Christmas presents that Christmas when I was 8 years old. It was a set of, a 26 set of, Encyclopedia Britannicas and a globe. And if you can imagine when you're a little kid, those are about the worst two gifts you can possibly imagine when you're eight. So no video games, no Nintendo, nothing fun. It's probably worse than socks and underwear. So I remember after school, I would go, and with not much to do, I promise I had a normal childhood. I at least started reading the encyclopedias and got fascinated with all the different countries you could look up. And now I'd find it on the map and vice versa. So I'd find a country on the globe and the map and look it up and read about it, and I'd get excited. My mom always told me that one day I could go visit all these places and see all these things. And I really did believe her. But then we never had any money, so I never got to go anywhere. So it was always a dream as I got older and older to actually visit these places I read about as a kid. It just kind of sparked my fascination and imagination. And it didn't even start until right when I graduated from college, to be honest. It was the very first time I left the U.S., and then it's just been an amazing journey around the world ever since then to all seven continents and getting close to the 196-country goal.
You broke up a little bit right there. You said to all seven continents and what?
And reaching the goal of all 196 countries. So,
but you're not old, right? So how old are you really, Garrett? Tell us.
Yeah. So I'm 37, and the goal is to get there by 40. So the next few years. I don't really know. I guess Elon Musk is trying to put people on Mars. That would be a pretty fun thing to try to connect up with, but who knows what the future holds. But yes, I love traveling, and if any listeners are out there, you can follow along the funny journey of all the countries at GG Worldwide on Instagram. That's kind of an easy one, and you'll see lots of ridiculous photos and lots of interesting places, but try to keep it lighthearted and fun as you travel and meet folks around the world.
Great. So let's dig into this, because there's a book that you wrote, 10 Seconds of Insane Courage, How to Unlock Your Courage to Unleash Your Potential. And obviously you're doing that in a lot of ways and a lot of fronts. And we'll talk a little bit more in detail as we get through the podcast about one of those, which is Chick-fil-A leadership. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But let's back up for a minute, Garrett. This book, why did you write this book? And we'll unpack it in a few minutes. So kind of give us the, you know, the 30-second flyover of why you wrote this book and what this book addresses.
Yeah, so I wrote this book in honor of my dad. And I've been a guy that kind of has said yes his whole life. Yes, I want to try it, go for it, do it, experience new things, go after, you know, whatever those crazy callings are that are buried deep inside your soul. And my dad, I love him to death. He was always a little bit more conservative, and he always wanted to wait and wait and wait. And so the idea was, and we always made a joke about it, that when he finally retired, we were going to get to do all these things together. And I kept waiting, and we kept waiting, and my dad worked in the insurance business for 40 years. And so finally he retired, and we made a big deal of it. We had a big party for him. And again, after working for 40 years in the insurance business, 30 days later, he found out he had stage 4 cancer and a year left to live. And it was one of the most heartbreaking things that you can find out or hear, especially when you hear about your dad, who's kind of a big hero to me and an amazing father. And I actually ended up moving in, helping take care of my father, and he lived another 9 months. And it just kind of showed me that we are not promised tomorrow. That what does it look like to say yes more often in the moment, to try to live out those big dreams, live out those big ideas, and not kind of just give way to this illusion of safety and the illusion that we have more time. And so I wrote this book literally called 10 Seconds of Insane Courage, which is how do you take those fears that hold us back, and what do you do about each one of those to have the courage to face the fears and then say yes more often in the moment. And that's what this book's all about.
So there are 8 fears in the book, right?
That's correct, yep.
So now, let me just name those for us really quick. Fear of the unknown, fear of letting go, fear that I am not good enough, fear of the first step, fear of bailing out, fear of not having enough, fear of disappointing others, and fear of failure. So do you espouse here that you have been affected by all 8 of those, or is your storyline kind of weaving in and out through some of those?
All of those, absolutely, and a bag of chips. I think if we're honest, you know, we all face, you know, this fear of failure, which is probably the overarching one. Maybe that, you know, we're not good enough, or because we don't know, we don't do. That's kind of the fear of the first step, or fear of the unknown, that we've never done it before. Why should we do it? Why should we stick our neck out there on the line? And so, you know, that can hold us back, not in crazy ways like skydiving, but in everyday ways where we want to speak up or talk to that person, or we're too afraid to maybe start that blog, or, you know, pitch that idea to our boss, or you know, whatever those things are in the moment that we've always wanted to do. And I think every single one of us as humans, we have imprinted on our heart and our soul that we're born to do big things. We're born to do something more. We're born to make a difference. But I think it's fear. And this book is rooted in schema therapy, which is a psychological term that kind of collapses all these 8 fears into 8, or it collapses fears into 8 of them in particular. Mm-hmm. And basically all of us fall into, if we're honest, at least one of the fears. And I would argue to say most likely all of the fears at some point in our life.
So what role has faith played for you in this whole journey of combating fear through this process?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, you know, as a Christian, I believe that, you know, ultimately, like, you know, we're here for something bigger than ourselves.
Right.
And, you know, wherever you are on the faith spectrum, I think that most people would tend to agree that if we just continue to do things for ourselves, we tend to, at the end of our lives, lead, you know, pretty empty lives where we wish we could have done more, given more, been more. And so I think for me, you know, I've always been super blessed with the opportunity to have some of these unique experiences. But I think for me personally, I always root it back to faith. And I think that the good Lord puts you in certain places for certain reasons. And you don't always know why. And for me, I like to say that in those moments, they're teachable moments. And they're moments where you have two options. And in those moments, you can either choose comfort or you can choose courage. And I think that even when we look back on life, that life is really made up of moments. And for me, someone that, you know, faith is an important role to me. I go to Buckhead Church, North Point Ministries here in Atlanta. Andy Stanley's my pastor. He's probably about the best communicator I've ever seen. And he has this great, you know, quote that I always love and try to live by, where it's, you know, if we want to do something good or we want to give back or we want to put, you know, others, you know, before ourselves and live kind of like the way that Christ did, you know, a godly life, it can be overwhelming sometimes.
Can be what? Overwhelming?
It can be overwhelming.
Right.
Yes, it can be very overwhelming. And sometimes we have this default or this fear that if we can't help everyone, then we oftentimes don't start or we don't do or we don't take the first step. These fears that I talk about in the book. But Andy Stanley gives a different point of view, which I actually like, have loved, and have taken on personally as well. And he simply says this. He says, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. Hmm. And I'm going to say that again. He says, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. And it's like, well, if I can't help everyone, then I'm not going to start. Well, if I can't give to all charities, I'm not going to give. Well, if I can't give my entire bank account, I'm not going to. He's like, no. He's like, life is not fair. He's like, nothing in life is fair. He's like, so don't think that you have to be fair about giving to everybody when in reality, just try to do for that one person, that one cause, that one organization, what you wish you could do for all causes, all groups, all organizations. That way, one, you don't get overwhelmed, and two, you're making an impact, and you never know the ripple effect that impact may have.
I like that, and of course, Andy Stanley's book, one of his books, Next Generation Leader, was a page-turner for me. It had a lot of great information and practical how-tos, and so thank you for sharing that. But I also think that your book has a lot of practical and how-tos in it as well, because you don't just kind of give a theory or an idea of a trusting issue or something, you know, as far as like a particular fear or something that you've got to overcome. You actually unpack it and tell us how to do that. So let's get deeply personal at the front end here. Can we do that? Are you ready, Garrett?
Let's do it. Absolutely.
Not a spoiler. Now, I've read your book, so not necessarily a spoiler, but for those who don't know, and I think it's important to catch that now, your dad obviously passed. And so how did you in that process, you know, in what ways was your faith challenged having to deal with your dad's passing and, you know, the pain of realizing that a lot of hopes and goals that you guys had together, you didn't get to achieve, but just passed a few months. How did you really deal with that from a faith perspective, personally? Not just something that you've written about, but personally.
And the honest answer, I was angry with God. And, you know, I don't understand why that happens. I don't understand, you know, I would think most people, if you lose your a dear parent at an early age, then you start questioning everything. Everything starts unraveling. All the things that you think that you're confident and sure about, you no longer are, or at least I no longer was. I kind of thought that my career was kind of going out, I'll call it up and to the right, heading in the right direction. Finally had gotten a multi-year contract with Chick-fil-A to help them think through their leadership strategies and build out something. And all of a sudden, I get a phone call. I got a text message from my dad that said, call me, very important. And I don't know about you, but men don't really communicate that way, or at least my dad and I don't.
No, we don't.
And I'm like, no, I'm like, okay, that's a little off. I'm not exactly sure. I better pick up this phone right now. And as kind of jovial as we are talking, I thought, you know, we just don't talk like that. What does that mean?
Right.
And then the next things out of his mouth were telling me that he had just gotten a second opinion, and it was stage 4 cancer, and I didn't even know how many stages there were, but it basically is the stage where it's inoperable, You can't operate on it, and it's just a matter of time. Mm. And I remember I was actually in San Francisco at the time. I took the first flight back. I just remember crying. Like, just, I was so upset. Because, again, you just question God. Like, why God? Why God? Why God? tearing up a little bit. But, and I remember a buddy, one of my best friends, he kind of just gave me a quote, and I'm going to mess it up a little bit, but he basically said, hey, sometimes we can't understand, you know, God's pen and how he writes out life, mm. but we can always trust God's path and what's best for us. Mm. And I kind of remember that, like the pen and the path. It's like, why would God, you know, write out the story of my dad's life and mine where it ends so early? And I didn't like it and I didn't understand it. But I've carried that thought with me because the path that unfolded after has been something so unique that in a weird and odd way, we helped Chick-fil-A. I'll tell you, this is crazy. We helped Chick-fil-A put together, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, kind of a next generation program for servant leaders. Mm-hmm. It's in most high schools in America right now, and we have more than 20,000 students go through it. Mm. And for the past few years, I'd given speeches, and we can talk about communication and teamwork and innovation, these big themes, you know, this and that. Da, da. And my buddy, Kevin Scott, that gave me that advice about the pen and the path, said, you know what, I think you should completely go off script at the kickoff that's filmed and then goes live, videoed into all these classrooms all across America to all these students. He goes, I think you should just be honest and talk about the story of your father. Mm-hmm. And I said, no way, not going to do that. That's crazy. Not going to happen. And then as the days got closer and the event came up and the kickoff was about to happen, I said, I'm just going to do it. And I talked about the struggle and how it was difficult and the day, how, you know, the days turned to weeks and weeks turned to months and he deteriorated and it got worse, but the conversations got better and they got deeper and they got richer. Mm. And the things that I never thought we were going to talk about, we did. And we got to close chapters on parts of our lives that were tough. And it kind of became, while yes, I had to move in and take care of a dying man, I also felt like I got a courtside seat next to my best friend.
Yeah.
To hear about what truly matters in life. Hmm. And it went from questioning God and hating what happened to all of a sudden I give that speech and I share that story and I'm just insanely vulnerable about how upset it was, but how good things can come from that. And the next thing I know, that's the message and that's the speech that resonates with the most amount of students in this program.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've all suffered loss.
Mm-hmm.
We've all suffered something that downright doesn't feel good. We've all questioned probably God at some point in our life and wondered why. And sometimes it just takes someone a little bit older, and in my case, I was a little bit older than these students, to say, hey, it's okay to be upset, but sometimes God has a bigger plan and path for our lives that we don't know about, and we may have to struggle through it, just like everything else in life. But trust it.
Mm-hmm.
But trust it. And now, you know, this September will be 5 years since my dad passed away. The one thing that I connect on a human level with more than anyone else that knows my story is not the fun adventures around the world. It's not the you know, unique, you know, whatever things you've done. It's the loss of a parent.
Mm-hmm.
It's sharing that it'll be okay. It's sharing that you'll learn something from this and that maybe you can share with someone in your inner circle and you never know the ripple effects of how that happens. And so in a very deep way, it's, has the wound completely healed on my faith from losing my father? It's getting there. But can I at least understand a little bit more of the path of maybe why this is happening? How to turn some of that hurt into something good for others in the world?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. And I think that's why we have a mighty God who understands far more than we ever can about far more things than we ever should. And it's all part of his master plan. And I've learned to just dig into that, to lean into that, and to appreciate that even more.
Garrett, I really appreciate you sharing that story about your dad, about that relationship, and about that struggle, because, you know, we need transparency, man. People need to know that there's some realities here that we are all struggling in some way. And I also think it comes full circle with your comments about, you know, your pastor, Andy Stanley's comments regarding, you know, taking care of that one person, giving them the best that you can give them, and seeing how that you actually left the road, you know, and paused everything to serve your dad. Man, I'm telling you, I'm a dad of three sons, and that is a powerful story and a fantastic idea and illustration for us today, that that faith is more important than just what we read and sometimes what we necessarily proclaim from the audience stage or from the stage of the audience. It's about how we live it, and you definitely lived it well. So, hey guys, don't leave. We're going to come right back to our second segment. We're going to talk about leadership, and you're going to hear more from Garrett as he unpacks this idea that he's doing with Chick-fil-A, and we'll be right back with Garrett. All right, Garrett, we're back, and we're moving forward with this second segment of this episode. We're going to talk about leadership. First, thank you for so much for sharing in the front end about your fears and your difficulties and your challenges. So now, what is this whole idea of, you talked about a little bit in this high school and Chick-fil-A and leadership. What's going on there?
Yeah, so, you know, Chick-fil-A is booming right now. So hopefully all your listeners at least know Chick-fil-A, got their favorite, you know. Mine is a number three combo, 8-count with a Dr. Pepper. I probably eat Chick-fil-A 3 times a week, and that's not because I work with them. It's because I love it. I love service, their values, how they believe in something bigger than selling a chicken sandwich.
What did you say? We dropped you for a minute there. You said their service and what? Start over with that. You eat there 3 times a week. Why?
Yeah, well, one, because their food is just so good.
I agree.
And because when you walk in there, it feels different.
Yeah.
And I think that starts with leadership at the top, and it goes all the way down to the frontline cashier person who, you know, has a smile on their face, puts, you know, an extra sauce in the bag without asking for extra money for it, mm-hmm. and ultimately says, it's my pleasure. And that doesn't just happen accidentally. That happens with thought. That happens by sharing your values of why Chick-fil-A exists to serve others beyond just a chicken sandwich. And I've had a great opportunity these past 5 years to be a part of working with that company and then helping put all that magic together to create a program called Chick-fil-A Leader Academy that I am a co-founder of a leadership consulting firm called Addo. And Addo is a fancy Latin word for inspire. But what we try to do is we inspire programs on behalf of brands that they can give to make impact in local communities. And so I had a chance to connect with one of the VPs of marketing at Chick-fil-A. His name is David Salyers 5 years ago. Just shared with him that, hey, through all of these adventures abroad, I used to be a study abroad professor teaching leadership and service in South Africa. But how do you not just get students to care about culture and leadership and service? I said, you have to make it real and tangible and make it come alive. So when I was a study abroad professor in Cape Town, South Africa, we had the students get outside the classroom, outside their comfort zone, and we made them go shark cage diving. We had them go bungee jumping. But we also had them connect and live with a community that lived off a dollar a day. And then
a dollar. Did you say a dollar?
A dollar.
A dollar.
$1 a day.
Wow.
There are more than 2 billion people. 2 billion. There's only 7 billion on Earth. There are more than 2 billion people that live off less than $2 a day. And many parts of Africa live off less than one. And so one of the things that when I ran a study abroad company and I was the professor, I've always been a little bit different and, you know, tried to make things come alive so that you'll remember it. I said, how can we ever understand what that means? And so we basically partnered with a local community called a township right outside of Cape Town in South Africa. And we had our students for a week live there with the community off $1 a day to see what it was like, to understand that communities have to pull together and pull together their resources, and that fun can oftentimes be talking and sitting down at a dinner table and going outside instead of being on their iPhones or playing video games or doing these things that we're so used to. But it makes it come alive. And so when we talked to Chick-fil-A, they were very interested in what could a program look like for free to local high schools that operators across America could give, again, for free, to just share the values of servant leadership. And I said, it's one thing to know it, it's another thing to do it. And so, you know, they could have worked with, you know, a church group or John Maxwell or, you know, Patrick Lencioni or Seth Godin, or you pick the leadership expert, but they would have given content and curriculum. And I said, content and curriculum only goes so far. You have to activate the ideas, especially with these next generation leaders, because they don't want to just see it. They also want to do it. And so the idea that we together created with Chick-fil-A became Chick-fil-A Leader Academy, which is an after-school program, 7 months long, and each month is a different theme, which talks about something these students care about in unique and relevant ways, themes that are universal in time, principles that are universal in time, vision and values, teamwork, communication, servant leadership, impact, innovation, but told in our generation, we had these ideas called choose your own adventure, where you could read a book and then go to page 52 if you want to jump off the cliff, or go to page 44 if you want to sail down the river. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of a popular series of books that we read in our generation. Well, this generation, they just don't read books. So they watch YouTube videos, and even TED Talks at 18 minutes are a little bit too long.
Yeah.
So how do we, in under 10 minutes, grab their attention, give them maybe two options of how they want to learn leadership? You know, is it learning about innovation from Walt Disney, or is it learning about innovation from Lin-Manuel Miranda, who created Hamilton and reimagined Broadway by adding, you know, music and a little bit of hip-hop and poetry to a long-lost art? And guess what the kids are going to pick? Obviously, they're probably going to pick Hamilton, which is okay, because it creates a relevant framework for them to understand timeless principles of leadership. And then what we've created is an entire video-based curriculum, login, back-end learning management system for teachers. So it's turnkey for teachers. It's engaging for students. But then what we've done is we've also partnered with the Chick-fil-A Foundation and said, hey, how great would it be if we give seed money to high school students across America, where they have to take what they've learned, and at the end of the year, they have to create what we call an impact project, where they get the 30 students in Chick-fil-A Leader Academy, rally not only their school but their community, to do something that positively impacts their local community. Mm-hmm. And Chick-fil-A Foundation will give out over $100,000, which we currently do. We give out $100,000 worth of micro grants to rent out the park or the gymnasium or the, you know, the posters, the flyers to promote it, or whatever their big cause may be. And these kids across America, 20,000 strong, have created some of the most memorable and impactful projects and programs. You can't even imagine. They're so good. But all because Chick-fil-A believes in the idea of servant leadership and equipping the next generation with the ideas of what servant leadership truly means.
Mm-hmm. You know, Robert Greenleaf, I think, is the founder of the whole term of servant leadership. Actually, I think Jesus is the founder of it, and then Robert Greenleaf. Robert Greenleaf actually talked about it, right? You know, but servant leadership at its core level is defined as a person who, you know, who wants to serve first and then be a leader. Kind of different than what we're seeing in the world so many times. So what does it really take to be a leader, Garrett? Unpack that for just a few minutes. You know, I mean, everybody wants to be a leader in some way, but what are the core essentials necessary to be a good leader?
Yeah, at its basic level, I think leaders have two things, followers and a greater why. And so if you're just kind of out there talking and espousing and yelling, I'm not sure you're a leader, because leaders actually have followers. But to me, even if a leader has followers, and by definition, you know, a leader has to have followers, I think the great leaders have a greater why, that they're doing it for something beyond themselves. And that can be, they're doing it for a group of people, they're doing it for a cause they believe in. But ultimately, I think great leaders, the ones that we look back on history, and I'm not saying short term, I'm saying great leaders, not good leaders, great leaders have that greater why. Because people tend to want to, they'll rally around personality in the short run.
Sure.
And that can make a news cycle, and it can completely exhaust news cycles in the current climate that we're at. But ultimately, news cycles come and go, personalities come and go, people come and go, but people that stand for a greater why are the reasons that big things happen and culture shifts. And I think leadership really comes down to that bigger, greater why, and that's why I think servant leadership, like you said, Robert Greenleaf, 1948, wrote an article that became an essay that has, you know, lasted over 50 years, and they're the types of leaders that put other people before themselves. And that's not a weak statement. That's not a, they're not a powerful person. It's just when you want to help someone do something else, and I call it trading I for you, that's an easy thing that all of us can do. So if you're listening to this podcast right now, you can trade I for you. Trade, hey, I want to get this. I want to do this. I want to become this right now for, hey, you know what? What if I also help you do this, you get this, and you become that? Because the more people you can help become do something else, tends to happen that people also want to give back, help out, and help you out as well.
Okay, we're going to go personal and deep again. Are you ready?
Yep, let's go for it.
I've read your book, so therefore that's why I'm able to go a little bit deeper in this dialogue, and I really want to challenge people to pick this book up. I'm telling you guys, it is a fantastic resource, and we'll put a link to it in our show notes so people can access it. But you talked about your dad, you know, in the book, and you talked about this whole idea of trading I for you. What were you really saying in that process?
That my dad did that over and over and over. And while, yes, he didn't, you know, get a chance to travel or maybe do his bucket list or see all the things that he wanted to, I'll tell you what he did a great job at was raising his family. And that means more to me now than I could have ever imagined growing up, because my dad traded I for you. My dad was a servant leader. My dad passed up job opportunities to be close to me. My dad never missed any of my Little League baseball games. I mean, I was so awful at sports. Again, he would show up, I would strike out every single time, and he would still take me out for ice cream at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And as someone, you know, who's, you know, long later in life and should have a bunch of other memories, that it still sticks out, my dad taking me to Dairy Queen and getting an ice cream after I had the worst Little League baseball career of all time. But he did. And again, he would continue to pass up these things so that I would have these opportunities. And it's just amazing, because now I look back and, like, that's the kind of leader that I want to become. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of person I want to be. And he set that example whether he even knew it or not.
And one of the core values of leadership, obviously, is this idea of relationship. You know, a lot of theorists will talk about the value of relationships as it involves that, you know, exchange between leaders and followers, or dads and sons in this situation. Any last closing thoughts on this particular segment before we move to the idea of service that you want to share with us regarding leadership?
I'll tell you, one of my favorite leaders is a guy named Clayton Christensen. He's a professor at Harvard Business School. Had the chance to meet him. But he wrote an amazing book called How Will You Measure Your Life? And it's an amazing book. He's an amazing leader. And he's also the world's foremost expert on innovation and disruption. So he's very smart, very funny, very clever. But I think when you take, I challenge people to do this. When you think about leadership, don't think about the leadership in the here and now. Think about the long view of leadership, of who you want to be when you're resting in that hospital bed, what you want to be proud of when you look back on your life. And trust me, this is a very new thing for me because I saw it with my father firsthand, but it's reshaped my view of leadership, of looking at leadership in the long run. And I think one of the best books you can read about that is How Will You Measure Your Life by a guy named Clayton Christensen. Great book, fast read.
And I think we're going to cap this one off with your dad, I think, telling you that his greatest success was, in fact, you. What a story worth telling. Hey, folks, don't leave us. We'll be right back, and we're going to talk about this final segment in our episode today, and we're going to talk about the idea of service. Back. Thank you for staying with us. Now we're going to talk about this idea of service. All right, Garrett. So service is obviously a reality. You talked about Chick-fil-A. You're talking about, you know, the spirit of service and the genuineness of service and hospitality and all of the above. But in this world today, in this, you know, you're traveling all over the world. You're seeing all kinds of people, all types of scenarios. What do you think are some of the biggest struggles as it relates to an idea of a servant? We talked about servant leadership in the last part, but as really as a desire to serve the world, what are some of the challenges that we're facing as people who really want to serve and trying to figure that process out?
Yeah, I would say that maybe one of the things that hold people back is they fear that serving others can be either too hard or it's too big.
Serving others is too hard or too big. Okay, we got it that time. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, and that serving others is either too hard or too big, and both are impediments to get started. And I say, you know, there's this fear of the first step that when we don't know, we often don't do. But just because we don't know doesn't mean that we shouldn't first try. And a lot of the things that you remember most in your life, the exciting moments were because you didn't know, you tried it, and it worked out well. And I'm going to go back and hammer home that same point from Andy Stanley. Do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. One of my proudest moments in life came from a complete disaster. The first time I went out of the country, I went to Hong Kong. It's on the other side of Atlanta, Georgia. The only reason I ended up there is because I put my finger on Atlanta, spun the globe, and the other side of the world where I pointed was where I landed. I read about Hong Kong when I was little in those encyclopedias, and that's where I decided I was going to go. And I worked 18 hours a day, 6.5 days a week. I watched my boss miss he and his wife's wedding anniversary and his four-year-old daughter's birthday in the first summer I was there. And I said, this is not what I want to do. This is not who I want to become. There's got to be more. And when I had the job offer in hand, I said, no, thank you. And I left. And one of the proudest things I did, I'm so happy, because a 10-year-old little boy taught me a lesson I'll never forget. And it goes back to the power of one. Is I called my mom and dad, and I said, Mom and Dad, I'm leaving Hong Kong. I hope you're sitting down. They're like, oh, no, what have you done this time? because I'm not the normal child that just, you know, first of all, you don't end up in Hong Kong as your first country. That's not normal. And the second part's even less normal, because I told them that I was going to take my time, and I was going to I always had wanted to volunteer. I wanted to give back. I wanted to do that complete opposite of 18 hours a day in Hong Kong. And so I told my parents that luckily when you work that much, you save all your money because you have no time to spend it. And I was going to go to Nairobi, Kenya. I was going to volunteer at an orphanage and give back. And my parents had lost their mind at this point. They had no idea what happened to their son. They're like, can't you just go volunteer in downtown Atlanta? Why? And it was just a burden that I was given. And I think all service comes from a burden that you have, that you want to do something more. And I show up, and let me set the scene. I know nothing about orphanages or HIV or AIDS or Africa or volunteering or anything.
Yeah.
I show up. It's about 102 degrees in Nairobi, Kenya, sweat dripping down my head, my brow. I'm already like drenched in sweat by the time I arrived. I get there, and there are 80 little kids, no dads, no moms, no nothing. And I see all these little kids, and they can't pronounce my name, Garrett, and they can't say my last name, Graveson. So they call me Gigi, my initials. And all of a sudden it was G, 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 G. And this one little boy, 10 years old, big orange baggy shirt with his pants so big that he has to pull his belt loop all the way to the very last one to keep his pants on. His name is Martin. And Martin became my little buddy that day. And Martin kind of hung around with me, and we hung out the whole time. And as I was leaving, again, not knowing what I was doing, Martin comes up, grabs the bottom of my shirt, looks me straight in the eye, and says, G-G-G-G, everyone says they'll be back. Will you really come back and see us?
Wow.
And at that moment, courage or comfort, courage or comfort. I was like, I wanted to have the courage, and I did. I said, yes, I will. And I didn't know what I was going to do or the impact I would have or if I could even make a difference. And again, days turned to weeks and weeks turned to months. And I was with Martin and all of his little friends. And I ended up spending an entire year there at this orphanage with these guys, these little girls, this amazing, you know, orphanage with these children affected by HIV and AIDS. And Martin had become my like best buddy. And he was the one that I really connected with on a soul deep level. And as I was coming back to the U.S. and my last few days in Nairobi with these children, I remember Martin said to me, he goes, G-G-G-G, you're my best friend in the whole world. He goes, will you promise that you'll always remember me? And I looked him in the eye and I gave him a high five and a big bear hug. And I said, Martin, you're one person I'll never forget. Mm-hmm. And he squeezed my shoulders, hugged me really hard. He goes, I know best friends keep promises. And so I came back to America, Atlanta, Georgia, as a man with his soul on fire with that Andy Stanley power of one. And I only had that one little kid, that one story, that one memory of that one little guy. And I said, hey, if I could do, what would I do for Martin that I wish I could do for everyone? And I told more people and I shared that story. And the next thing, we started a charity for kids with HIV and AIDS. I knew nothing about HIV and AIDS. All I knew is how could we create a mentoring program similar to Big Brothers, Big Sisters, because these same kids need it. They oftentimes lose a mother or a father or both. It'd be amazing to have a steady mentor in their life. And the CDC and Big Brothers, Big Sisters are both headquartered in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. What I didn't know is I gave that speech and I told that one story at that one moment. And in the audience that day were some UGA icons, Mark Rick and Vince Dooley. Vince Dooley, a longtime living legend of football. Mark Rick was our head football coach at the time.
Go Dogs. Go ahead.
Go Dogs. Go Dogs. Fast forward. They both hear the story, join our board of directors for the charity. Charity's called Hero for Children. Fast forward, we started helping these children with summer camps and Christmas presents and mentoring programs because of one story, one little kid. One moment in Africa that changed my life, the power of one. Fast forward again. All of these students that got involved and became mentors for these children started to care about a cause that none of us really knew about before. But it goes back to, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. I wish I could help out all of these children. I wish I could help out all of the people around the world, but I can't. I knew I could do it for Martin. And whatever it is, maybe it's someone where you can volunteer after work or on the weekends, or you can give back or help out at your local church, or maybe you can just do one thing, but do that one thing really well that you wish you could do for entire communities. And I think when we lean in and do that one thing, that's when we can make a difference, because you never know the ripple effect of what will happen years down the line. And I'll tell you a crazy story. When I wrote this book called 10 Seconds of Insane Courage, I said, who do you put on the back of your book? Who do you get to give credibility? And I told my publisher, two people that really inspired me were Mark Rick and Vince Dooley. I'd love to put them on the back of the book. Go Dogs.
Absolutely.
The guy says, no, you can't write a book called 10 Seconds of Insane Courage without wanting to ask someone insane and out of your league to endorse it. And I said, oh boy, can we skip that part? Can we just publish the book and be done with it? He said, no, we're going to put your theory to the test. He goes, who do you think represents, in the world, whether it's media, entertainment, books, leadership, that connects and relates to, this generation, next generation, who is your top person that you think embodies courage, facing fears, being strong, going for it? And I said, it's funny because I write in my book, and I try to be relevant, the story of Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And Dwayne The Rock Johnson went to the University of Miami, wanted to be a football player, broke his back, never made it to the NFL, goes to the CFL, gets cut. And the day he gets cut, he ends up trying to get a taxi to come pick him up. And the taxi comes, and he reaches in his wallet, and he only has a 5 and 2 ones, $7. The taxi says, not even enough money to get you out of here. Taxi leaves. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, 6'5", 260 pounds, starts crying and makes a promise to himself that day. He says, the day that I make it, I'm going to start a company called 7 Bucks Productions as a reminder to myself of how far I've come and how far anyone can come if they ever have at least $7 in their pocket. Mm-hmm. And I love that story. And I'm telling my publisher, and he says, then guess who we're going to try to get for the back of your book? I said, I have no idea. He says, we're going to get Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And I said, with all due respect, sir, I don't know Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I have no. And I paused, and I stopped. And I said, this may just be insane enough. Here's an idea. I said, 15 years ago, I stood at an AIDS orphanage in Africa, met a little boy named Martin, came back because of that little guy. I was so inspired that I started that charity. And the first two board members were Vince Dooley and Mark Richt. Mm. And now Mark Richt is the head football coach at the University of Miami, mm-hmm. where The Rock went to school at the University of Miami.
Yep.
And we connected with Coach Richt, and Coach Richt vouched for my credibility and connected with The Rock and his publicist. And The Rock, after sharing about my story, why it matters, and having the courage to say yes more often, decided to endorse the back of my book.
Wow, what a story. I'm going to follow up with that with a quote from page 104 in 10 Seconds of Insane Courage. This is by our friend Garrett. We can find 100 reasons to put things off. We only need one better reason to seize the moment and take action. Garrett, I'm so glad you took some time out of your schedule today to join us. What a powerful story. How can people get a hold of your book if they need to get it, or how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, so I would just say Amazon is probably the easiest way right now, and 10 Seconds of Insane Courage, you can type it in. Hopefully everyone has Amazon. It's a great book. I'd love for you to grab a copy and write a review if you can. And then personally, I'd love for you to follow the journey. If you have Instagram, that's the easiest, GG Worldwide. Again, that's GG Worldwide on Instagram. If you're traveling, let me know if you have some interesting people along the journey that you think would be great to connect or meet up with. I'd love to talk with them and interview them as well, anywhere around the world. So Amazon for the book, Instagram, GG Worldwide. Love to connect and reach out to anyone out there listening.
Thank you guys for joining us on Servcast. As always, remember, you're made for more. Somebody needs you, so give of yourself today and give your best. Let's make a difference in the world. Take care, Garrett. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks so much.
Thank you guys so much for joining us on Servcast. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes and share us on Facebook. Hey, if you've got any questions, send them to servcast22@gmail.com. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Servcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, his guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.